Welcome to the GeoMob Podcast, where we discuss geo-innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Welcome back to another GeoMob Podcast. Today is a little bit different. My guest is an old friend, Steve McLeod, who, while he does have some background in geospatial and is a regular attendee at GeoMob Barcelona, I have not invited Steve here on the show to tell us about his geo startup or his geospatial project, but rather to discuss his business, which is a service called Feature Upvote. And this is a service that we have started using a couple weeks ago, first at GeoMob Barcelona, and then last week also at GeoMob Berlin, for our voting for the best speaker. You know, as longtime listeners may recall, we used to do the vote by show of hands, and we had some feedback that some people weren't enjoying that, or they found it a bit off-putting and threatening to speakers. So we switched, so I was looking for a new solution, and I shared that that need with Steve, and he very kindly offered to let us use Feature Upvote for the voting. And so now we do anonymous voting, but also so that while we can see who got the most votes, we don't see exactly how many votes each speaker got. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about, as you might expect from someone that runs a service named Feature Upvote, Steve is an expert at kind of product prioritization. Feature Upvote is used by hundreds of organizations, businesses, other types of organizations, large and small, all around the world. It's been running for several years. And so I think he has a lot of feedback that he could give to anyone designing services with many features, which obviously many geospatial services are. Okay, very long-winded intro. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ed. It's a pleasure to be here. Hey, but you introduced me as an old friend, and I take umbrage at the old, where I started to, but then I can see on the video feed that only you and I can see that I am looking a bit old. So actually, no offense taken. I actually realized it was quite a fear.
What I meant is that our friendship is old, Steve.
Okay. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your background in geospatial, Steve, before you saw the light and moved on to something more important.
Oh, some memory trip down memory lane. I actually got a chance to do some geospatial stuff back before it was widespread. So, Ed, I think like me, you date back to working in the early days of the internet, right? The thing they call the 90s. Back when, if you knew how to do a bit of HTML, suddenly you're an expert. So I was working on one project with the Australian state of Victoria, their government agency that fights against forest fires or bushfires or country fires, whatever you want to call them. And they were looking at this tool that now everybody's heard of, or company called ESRI. I think you say ESRI in Europe, but in Australia we were saying ESRI. And I got to do a little bit of work with that. And just by the fact that that tool was so new and I was the first person in the organization to do something with it, suddenly I was the expert. And I was getting introduced by word of mouth to other organizations, going in, having to go in there and act like I actually knew a whole lot about this stuff. But actually, I just knew a little bit more than the people I was talking to. So that was my background in geospatial.
And then you moved on to greener pastures?
I did, but can we talk a little bit more about those days? Because there were a couple of things I think really interesting. It wasn't just doing maps for the sake of doing maps. It was doing maps for the sake of saving human lives. And we're not talking about this in the abstract. Fighting forest fires is a really dangerous thing. And if you put the wrong resources, which is, you know, whether it can be like tankers or aircraft or people, if you put them in the wrong place at the wrong time, they will not get away in time. They'll be caught and they'll die. And this actually has happened several times with people who work for that agency. Always somber days. And then by having the right information at the right time, you can actually make sure you're not putting people in a place where their lives are in danger. It can be about the people who the civilians, you know, the people who have to be warned to evacuate in time. If you've warned people to evacuate too often, then it becomes like the boy who cries wolf and they stop listening. So you want to make sure that when you tell them to evacuate, it's because there's a real incredible threat. Or it can be like saving the lives of the people actually working in the agency.
Well, the importance of geospatial has not changed. You are absolutely right. What has changed, as we saw at the recent GeoMap Barcelona, where you were also in attendance, is, of course, the technologies that are available to us, and particularly around imagery and things like that. So,
yeah, so before we had, like, real-time mapping, well, there's three things that I can recall that put you in danger, or that affect the way that forest fires spread. It's the terrain, which is where the geospatial data comes in, and it's the fuel, which is the vegetation lush. Is it dry? Is there lots of it? Has it been recently treated? And then there's the weather. So we got to do, I got, so also to give a bit more detail, there was one guy who was in this agency who was like the one who got to do experimentation with new technology, but he did it in the high level, and often he would just come and get me to do new consulting gigs where I get to play with whatever toys. So one toy was to take portable weather stations, go and put them in places where there was no good weather data, where you could... Now, this was also before we were able to have real-time satellite links of data. So then we needed a way to go to those stations, gather the data using Palm Pilots. That was the technology, the portable technology of the day, and bring it in. And then you combine that with maps and, of course, information about the vegetation. And then you could tell, okay, this terrain is very uphill, which is good for forest fire spreading. The vegetation's dry because we had a very wet spring, but now the summer's been dry and it's made sure there's a lot of vegetation that's dry. And then the maps. Now, by putting all this map and they were using old paper maps, you know, with the Easting Northing system. I guess this is, forgive me, I'm not sure how it works in Europe, but in Australia, everybody was still using the Easting and Northing system of trying to turn three-dimensional coordinates into a two-dimensional
system. It's used in many countries.
Okay. Actually, I got the chance to write a little bit of code to convert Eastings and Northings into Latin long. It all went well. I had to convert some C code to Visual Basic, I think. And then they came back to me a couple of years later and told me that my code had a fatal bug. It only worked in one hemisphere. And the other hemisphere...
Minor details, Steve. Come on.
Yeah. So, it was a long time ago, so my memory's hazy, but I do recall that one of the first things we were doing was, before we got to use Esri's great software, we were using Perl, a Perl library that allowed us to put a GIF on a map according to the Easting and Northing, and then that would be up on a website. So it kind of looked interactive, but every few minutes we'd just regenerate these maps using Perl to put the right image in the right place. But, you know, it was better than what they had beforehand, which was no way of telling what resources were where.
Well done. But eventually you moved on, leaving Geo behind. You also moved to Europe, where you're now based. And finally you started Feature Upvote. Tell us exactly what Feature Upvote is.
Okay, Feature Upvote is a SaaS product, a software tool that allows your customers to openly suggest and upvote ideas for your product. We made it specifically for software companies, more on the consumer side of things, where you have many, many customers for feedback and you can't possibly hope to implement it all. We've been doing that for 7 years. It's found its niche in SaaS companies, sometimes used at events like yours, although that's a bit of an outlier. And for computer games, video games, it's also proven to be very popular.
So the basic idea is if I'm a business and I have a lot of users, then they can come to this board and submit feature requests or vote on other people's feature requests, kind of like a, you know, similar to Reddit or something like that. I can vote something up, and that way as a product manager, you know, I can see, okay, this feature, actually a lot of people want it, or this people doesn't seem that important. Am I explaining it correctly?
You are. And the cynical side of things is it's a way for product managers to prove themselves right, because you might have somebody in the organization, a boss or a developer or someone else who says, we have to really do this thing. I think this is very important. Everybody wants it. And the product manager can say, well, actually, we have this feature upvote board, and I can see that we only two people have voted up that thing you wanted, whereas we have 100 people wanting this other thing. So it gives them the data they can start using to make informed decisions. That data alone is not enough, of course, but it's a starting point.
Okay, and there are a lot of different functionalities in terms of who can suggest the feature. You know, is it anyone can suggest the feature, or only the company internal people can suggest the feature? And then, as we see at GeoMob, whether the voting is public or private and things like that. So that luckily we were able to adapt the tool quite well for our sort of anonymous. Anonymous isn't the right word, because of course the voters are anonymous, but I mean, not displaying the number of votes, only to, or displaying only to the admin,
and not having to register. I recall that we were having dinner together, Ed, and you were talking about how much trouble you were having finding a simple tool that didn't require people to have to go several steps just to vote on something. And as you're describing this, I got thinking, like, well, we didn't really design Feature Upvote to be used in events like GeoMob. But you want it so people can't see the votes, so they don't need to sign up, they don't even have to put in an email address. It's just, they just go to a page and click. I thought, I guess if we like really tweak all the settings, you could probably do that in Feature Upvote, which is why I then got in touch with you the next day and said, hey, I think we could make this work for you. Do you want to give it a try?
Yes, it's worked quite well. We tried it out in Barcelona and then again last week in Berlin. And what I do like about it a lot is exactly that, the simplicity, because I need a tool that, you know, when now we have GeoMob in many different cities, so it's not as if I'm always the one organizing it. You know, there are going to be different organizers in each city, so, you know, I don't want these people to have to go through some complex training or registration or whatever. Instead, you know, there's just one account, they log in, they list the speakers, then we put up a QR code at the event, people go to the voting, they vote, and then the admin can see who got the most votes, and we give out the prize. The whole thing, we did it last week in Berlin. The whole thing takes, you know, 2 minutes. So, well done, Steve.
Thank you. Tell me, from the point of view of the person running the conference or running the event, how was it to use Feature Upvote to put in the speakers and look at the votes and configure
entering,
it?
Entering the speakers and all that is quite simple. You know, we only have 5 speakers, so, you know, I just list their names. We did have some feedback that, I guess it's kind of a unique situation in that, you know, basically I put up the QR code on the screen and then all of a sudden everyone goes to that page. And, you know, some people were they would click vote and they didn't really immediately see something had happened. But it worked fine. I saw the votes come in and we were able to determine the winner and give out the prize. And, you know, because this is just kind of a bit of fun that we have at the events. The prize is more symbolic than actually like an important, you know, particularly valuable. And so we want to do it, but I don't want it to take more than 5 minutes because, yeah. You know, this is a tiny part of GeoMob, and particularly it's right after the talks and then we're on our way to go have the discussions over beers. So, you know, people don't want to have a long interlude or whatever. It's more just about as a chance to have a bit of fun. So in that regard, Feature Upvote has worked well. So thanks very
much. You say it's just a bit of fun, but I'm certain that the person each time who gets the prize for best speaker is going home and telling their friends, their family, that they're happy about it. You know, we all like to have a little bit of acknowledgement in life.
Yes, that is true. And one thing that's interesting is we don't, you know, I tell people you can vote based on any criteria you like. You know, whether you enjoyed the talk or you liked the topic or you're friends with the speaker or whatever. So we don't really know why people win. Beyond, I will say this. One thing that continually fascinates me, having done GeoMob now for many years in different cities, ahead of time, you know, I see the list of talks and I often have my own opinions, of course, of like which talk is going to be interesting and which one, you know, might be a little more dry or more niche. And I'm often wrong. And the big differentiator is the enthusiasm that the speaker brings for the topic. You can have the most niche topic, you know, highly technical or very obscure, but if someone is excited about it, then they convey that enthusiasm and they usually win. And then on the other hand, we often have topics where you know, it's some amazing new cutting edge technology or from some big company, you know, that's doing very impressive things. And for whatever reason, the speaker just doesn't convey the enthusiasm and it kind of falls flat.
We want to be entertained. It goes a long way, putting in a nice spin. Hey, Ed, I want to go back just a little bit because you talked about some problem with the voting and it just triggered something on your feature upvote dashboard in the site you see. There's a throttling control. You can just turn off throttling. That's probably going to solve that problem.
Yes. Okay. Well, this was the one issue is that, you know, as I said, we in Berlin, you know, we had 40 or 50 people and they all immediately show up on the site, all probably using the Wi-Fi. So all coming from the same IP address. So I could imagine you might have, you know, that might look spammy or whatever. So this is interesting. The service has kind of throttling features as well. What are some of the challenges that your customers have in offering a feature voting board?
Oh my goodness. When we're just a few months old, we got a couple of customers in the crypto space. Now, I'm not going to make any value judgment about cryptocurrency technology here, but I will say that if you're running a feedback board for a crypto product, you're going to get a lot of people trying to manipulate things, running bots to try to manipulate the voting or whatever. So in some way, they did us a favor because it showed us that we needed to have some like spam protection, some throttling, some ways to prevent abuse. And all that stuff's been built in and it's in the background. Usually you don't even know it's happening. So every suggestion somebody makes, we put it through a spam detector. We have throttling on both the vote level, on the suggestion level, and on the IP level. A whole lot of things going on. And we also realized that we should, by default, not let people do anything that triggers an email until they're a paying customer, because people will try to use Feature Upvote or any SaaS tool like this to send out emails where they can like insert content that you didn't expect to be sent in there. Oh yeah, a whole lot of these things. As soon as there's a text box on an internet page, a web page that somebody put content in, somebody's going to come along and try to abuse it or misuse it.
Well, this is interesting, Steve, because I know that now, having run Feature Up for I think you said 7 years or anyway for a while, you've learned a lot about how the dynamics of a service trying to collect feedback from their users, from their customers. And so I want you to give some advice to listeners who perhaps run a geospatial service of all different types. So first of all, what are the classic mistakes that people make in trying to gather feedback?
One is to think that all feedback is equal. It clearly isn't. Ed, I'm going to assume in your own business, I guess listeners know that you also run OpenCage Data, right? Yeah. So you, if I understand, you have a freemium plan. You can actually be on it forever and never pay money. Is that right?
Yes, no. So we do have a free trial. People need to trial it. It's free while you're testing. But if you're using it ongoing, we encourage you to upgrade.
So somebody in the free trial, their feedback might be, I want longer trial. I want more stuff for free. I don't want to pay. And then you have a paying customer who might say, I want you to make this improvement. Or then you have a paying customer who's paying you a lot of money who asks for something else. And their input's not equal. And you learn very quickly that you need a way to distinguish between people who are paying you money and who are not paying money. So actually what I've seen people do is have two feedback boards, the public one, which tends to get overrun with the stuff from the people on the freemium plan, and then the private one, which is where they actually record, the company will record the feedback themselves saying customer X requested this. And that way you're actually managing to keep some noise away from your feedback thing. Now, the people on the free plan, they might give you some really useful feedback, but you're going to value that really differently from the stuff coming from the people who are paying you money.
Makes total sense.
I use Strava to track my bicycle riding. Yes. Strava is a classic case in which I think they must have something like 10,000 free customers to every paying customer, something like that. I don't know the real numbers, but the information they're getting from people like me is give us more on the free plan. But of course, they don't want to do that because they need to make money. They need to charge money. They need to actually listen to what the paying customers say.
Well, this is a very interesting point, Steve, because a lot of our listeners, as I'm sure you're aware, much of the software used in the geospatial world is open source. And of course, you know, we have projects like OpenStreetMap where it's a volunteer driven project and people are contributing data, same thing and for the software. And so, you know, imagine you're a listener who is running one of these open source projects. So people don't pay, right? How do you, any advice for that sort of dynamic and how to value the feedback or any extra considerations that people should have there?
Yeah, if you haven't done it already, you need to write down in concrete form your vision for the product, where you see it going, who it's designed to serve, and so on. You need something that you can use as a way to judge feedback and to say to people, you know, we appreciate your feedback. It doesn't fit in at the moment with where we see something going. You also need to be very, very polite in saying no. If you just say no, we're not doing this, it just creates unnecessary tension, which is really hard. But if you can have a polite way of saying, no, this doesn't fit in with what we want, and a very clear vision for what you want, that's going to help you a lot in deciding what to do with the endless feedback you're getting.
Okay. I do have another question for you, and this comes from my own experience with OpenCage. It's kind of the opposite problem. So I know your feature upvote is designed to help me prioritize all the feedback and make a decision as to which feedback is more valuable or more demanded by the community or the users. But, you know, we at our service, OpenCage, our users are software developers all around the world. And one of the biggest challenges we have, I mean, there are some software developers who are very outspoken, but we have many who are not at all. You know, they like to use the tool, they try the tool, they play with it and they try to get it to do what they want. Maybe they read the documentation, but they don't give feedback. It's very difficult to, you know, and I can think of all kinds of reasons this might be, you know, the language issues or whatever, but it's more just like, so we actually struggle to solicit useful feedback.
Yeah. I think you're not alone, and sometimes it's a numbers game. Like if you have 1 million customers, or in the case of Instagram or something, tens or hundreds of millions, if you can get 0.1% to give you feedback, you're still going to get a lot of feedback. But for businesses like yours and mine, we're far more modest. And you know, you're always going to have trouble getting meaningful amounts of data from a small user base. Second, I think especially in the case of software developers, we've just been beaten down over the years and trained that people don't actually care what we have to say. And we kind of learn not to give feedback because we realize that it just goes into a /dev/null, as we'd say in developer talk. Like, you know, people just ignore it. And I think you're fighting against that. You really have to tell people over and over again in all your communications, we actually do want feedback. Tell us. And you have to make it really, really easy for people to give you feedback. So, for example, the GeoMob events, you made it so people can vote without having to sign up or anything because you know that's the only way you'll get them to do it. Mm. Same with feedback. Like, don't make people go through a 20-page questionnaire. Just give them, like, one box to fill in where they don't even have to sign up, or whenever you send out a newsletter or onboarding emails, if you do that, anything, make it really clear. Reply to this and tell me. Reply to this and answer. Again, you won't get much response, but you have to do everything you can do to make it really easy to give feedback and to make it clear that you want that feedback. You can't just ask once. You have to ask multiple times. You've also got the problem that you need to be asking at the time in which somebody actually has the problem, and that's a tough one. Especially if you don't have continuing channels. Do you have continuing channels to reach out to your paying customers?
Well, just email. We just use email as our way of communicating with people. If someone wants to schedule a call or whatever, of course we gladly do that. But that very, very rarely happens.
Yeah, it can be in your invoice. Of course, the invoices probably go to a different person who's using the software, which is also another problem. But yeah, it's tough, and we all have the problem. And I think over the years, people give less feedback, especially software developers, because we've just been learnt. Like I said, it goes to a bin.
Well, another challenge that we grapple with is we're very fortunate to have customers all over the world. And, you know, software developers all around the world, the language of programming and documentation is clearly in English. And so many of these people are completely able to read English. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean they feel fully comfortable writing in English or speaking in English.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, some people solve that. They use Google Translate or whatever. And which is totally fine. I mean, we have some customers that's, you know, or they write to me in their language and then I put it in translation software and write back. But I think there are many, many people who they don't, you know, it's just yet another hurdle for them to overcome. And so they don't, you know, or it's very hard to pull useful information out of them.
Yeah, it is hard. I don't really have a solution to the language problem. I'm a native English speaker living in Spain, and I have this problem myself every day. And I know I get timid about talking to people in some situations, but just because of that, I'm not just trying to express myself. I'm trying to do it in a foreign language. It's hard. I want to go back to the thing about how to make it easy, or how to make people feel listened to. And something about feature upvote, our default way of doing it is to have it open and public, because then people do feel that when they start seeing their suggestion get some votes, they do feel like, oh, they are getting listened to, especially if we've made it a system where the administrators or the moderators can change the status of a suggestion from under consideration to planned or
being developed or whatever.
Something like that. Right. And each time that happens, an email goes out to the person who made the suggestion plus the people who voted it up. So they do get this sense like, oh, what I have to say is actually important. It's one of those minor things. Now, of course, you probably, listeners are not using a tool like Feature Upvote, but this thing that you actually do tell people once their idea or their feedback, something's happening to it, to tell them or to show them somehow something's happening to it, kind of trains them that you're a company that in the future they can also expect that they are going to be listened to.
That's such a good point, because I'm thinking to myself, I mean, obviously within OpenCage we use a lot of different software services, and there are some we've used for years and they're very responsive, and that's one of the key reasons that I use them, because I mean obviously all software has bugs or rough edges or things that don't work exactly as we need, and then I'm quite vocal about giving people feedback, and
I've noticed that. I've had you as a customer for a few weeks and I got some very helpful feedback already, and you may not have noticed, but we actually made some changes to our user interface based on the feedback you gave me.
Well done Steve.
Because as a person running a software company, I also have the same point, the same problem. Like, I want people to tell me what's wrong. I want them to tell me about the hurdles that trip them up so we can do something about it.
Well, it's so hard because especially, I mean, if you've worked on this now for many years, just as I've worked on my business, and you get blind to it. You just get completely blind. It's impossible to see it with the eyes of a new user.
So our tool's designed, yeah, you do completely, 100% a problem. So our tool's designed for getting quantitative data, but qualitative data, that's a hard word to say in a podcast, data that has quality, it's also very helpful. And an example is that very early on in Feature Upvote, somebody who had just become a paying customer wrote on our own feedback board that they wanted single sign-on. And I was curious about this, what exactly they meant. It can mean different things to different people. So I actually got in touch with the customer and said, oh, saw you asked for this. I would like to hear more about it. And that really changed the way they described what they were doing. And then I managed to work out that they wanted single sign-on according to the SAML version 2.0 standard, specifically with a particular service they were using, which is all good and fine. I said, okay, great, we'll consider that for the future. Kind of a very wishy-washy way to say we're not going to do it yet. And then they came back a week later and said, look, we want to release this, your board, to our users. We want to have 7 boards for 7 different products, but we can't do it until there's single sign-on. What would we need to pay to get you to do this now? And suddenly I had this idea that they were very serious about giving us lots of money on an ongoing basis, and we went and did single sign-on straight away. We dropped everything else and did it. We're quite young at the time, and hey, they are still a customer now. They went every new product, they add another feature upvote board. We charge by the board, by the way. So this idea that just trying to do everything through surveys or tools like Feature Upvote, that's a starting point, but you also need to be talking to people and getting that more direct insights that you get one-on-one.
Very nice lesson to leave our listeners with, Steve. Well done. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, Steve. And above all, I appreciate you letting us use Feature Upvote. And you can be sure I will not be bashful with the feedback as we try it out in other cities. So What is the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to learn more, if they want to try out Feature Upvote? How do they go forward?
So just go to our website, featureupvote.com, write to me personally, steve@featureupvote.com, or LinkedIn is the social media in which I'm most active these days when it comes to business things. And I think you will be, Ed, you mentioned beforehand, you'd include my LinkedIn link in the show notes.
We'll definitely put all these links in the show notes. So
yeah.
Very nice, Steve. Thanks again. And I look forward to seeing you at all future GeoMob Barcelonas.
Ed, I'd like to say again, it's been a pleasure and an honor to be here, very much especially because this is not a normal type of GeoMob interview, I guess. So thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today and listening to the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Please get in touch with us if you have any feedback or suggestions for topics we should cover. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly mailing list where we keep you informed about upcoming events. You can also follow us on Twitter, where our handle is GeoMob. Thanks again for listening, and hope to see you at a GeoMob event soon.